tell us a little bit about the book and perhaps what you wanted to get across in the book, you know, the stories and the way you wanted to portray yourself.
Well, what it was, I mean, just the book in the first place was because I got asked so many times over the years by various reporters, things like that, and when's your book coming out, when's this, when's that, you know, I never had any intention of doing one, but obviously, as a, you know, I started it off and it took a long time, but again, it was a situation where people were asking me questions. Everywhere I go, there's always somebody asking a certain question, this and that. And it's just basically answering those type of questions what everybody wanted to know about, little bits of stories about my past, whether it be on the field or off it. And so it was just that type of thing that comes to the surface. Also, I was trying to basically get across that, you know, I mean, I never joined the professional ranks till I was 18 years of age. So I know they take all the youngsters now and they take them at such an early age, but with me it was a different type of thing altogether. I was playing for South Liverpool, which is something like Eastleigh Football Club and things like that. So with that, any ex-professional will tell you, we did have knockbacks along the way, because one particular incident was I went to Burnley for a trial when I was just 16 and a half. I went for a three-day trial over there and I got turned away, told I wasn't good enough, things like that. He wasn't tall enough, wasn't good enough. And that particular person or coach was Dave Merrington. And after all them years, I ended up at Southampton after winning all them trophies at Liverpool. And I used to tug his shirt every morning and say, the one that got away, eh? You know? So there's little bits like that. But I was shattered when I got told that I wasn't good enough for Burnley Football Club. Also, I didn't get in Liverpool Schoolboys, which is an inroad to, you know, league clubs and that. So
when you make it, and you are a Liverpool player. Mm-hmm. Are you a Liverpool player that's maybe a bit more streetwise than the rest because you've gone through a different route to get there?
I think possibly you can be like that, because I think possibly you could want it a bit more than the kid that's been there for a long time. They get set in the ways. Even when I come down to Southampton and I saw kids that would go through, they'd start putting their work in just before they were going to sign a contract instead of being consistent right the way through, and that's where they think the coaches are not looking. So some of the time, I always give it my all as soon as I started right the way through, because as I say, later on in life, I've seen these, you know, youngsters and they didn't eventually get signed on. So it's not just the 2 weeks as you come up to your signing session, you know, so it was a bit like that. I felt, as I went into it, that, you know, I just wanted it probably a little bit more than the ordinary lad.
Down in this part of the world, of course, we all know you so well for the spell at Southampton, two spells with Brighton. Yeah. You were even at Bournemouth for a while as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, you were, you know, probably the best club in the world in that era. You know, and part of that kind of Liverpool era. What was it like to be at Anfield and a player with the coaches and managers that were there?
Well, it was unbelievable, really, because, I mean, obviously, I went through the Terraces situation, you know, on standing on the cop, watching my team, which was obviously Lawrence Lawler, Burns, Smith, Stevenson, you know, Milne, and Roger Hunt, and them type. So, and then you progress, obviously, from the boys' pen to the main cop, and then all I ever wanted to do was pull on that red shirt at that particular time when you were a youngster, and when I eventually got the trial and then went into the changing room. It took me a while to get into the first team changing room, obviously, but once you're there, I was with Tommy Smith and the likes of Ian Callaghan and Chris Lawler. These were all Liverpool lads as well. And I always remember even thinking back that Ian Callaghan, who I played in the European Cup final in Rome with him in 1977, he presented me with a medal when I was 9 years of age in my junior school. So, I mean, just to be up alongside them people or them players was, you know, a fantastic feeling. And I knew what the cop was all about, but I didn't, obviously, when you go out there and actually perform in front of them, just to this very day, sometimes you go, well, did I actually do that? You know, it's a bit of that situation.
And there was obviously the successes of the likes of Derby, Aston Villa, Nottingham Forest in that kind of era, but Liverpool were the club. They were the club that everybody around the world knew, really, in English football, weren't they? And you were part of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you could say you were fortunate to be in the right place at the right time, but you still have to, people say about my tackling, things like that, I was a tough player, but I always say, and I've said in the book as well, that, you know, I don't think you can get in that particular Liverpool side if you can't play a bit as well. So there's a little bit about. I thought I was more of the bread and butter player, the one that works hard. Well, you say we win the ball for, you know, and give it to our more gifted players like Kenny Dalglish or Kevin Keegan at the time, and Graham Souness has joined us as well. So, but that particular team, I think we had confidence, obviously, winning games and things, but we never had the arrogance of after the game or boasting about anything. Like, I always remember my first league championship medal. I mean, Bob Paisley, he was walking down the corridor and he just shouts over his shoulder to me. I just passed him in the corridor and he goes, "There's one in there for you, go and get it." And this was like, I said, "What was that, boss?" He said, "In the office, go and get it." So I went into his office and on the table was all these black boxes with yellow postage stickers on, you know, and it was Ray Kennedy, John Toshek, Stevie Highway. And then I took my postage sticker off and it was the Football League, it written on it in gold letters. And that was my first division championship medal. "There's one in there for you, go and get it." And that was it. You know, yeah, because it was all forgotten then. You had to start it all over again next year. They kept your feet on the ground, that's for sure.
So from there, really, the next major step in your career is a very eventful period in Brighton's history. Well, the first of two eventful periods that you would be part of with Brighton.
Yeah.
Of course, we all know about 83. I mean, that is the kind of one highlight that sticks out. But the Albion were a club that, well, they went somewhere and then slipped away again. But again, an interesting part of that club's history to be there for.
Yeah, I mean, with the cup final and the run towards it, we got relegated as well. But having said that, I think the team and funnily enough, the town at the time was right up for the cup competitions. Every game as it come along, it's as if like the league wasn't in their mind whatsoever. It was just that we were progressing, and obviously we had tough games in there, Liverpool away, Newcastle and Manchester City at the time. And you know, to get through to the final, I mean, I was absolutely, you know, made up with that, because as you rightly said before, that, you know, I was in the Liverpool squad where it was looked upon that you should be there or thereabouts. But with Brighton, it's a whole new thing to get there, and obviously we went on underdogs. So we gave a good account of ourselves.
You should have won it.
We should have won it with Gordon Smith. Yeah, but to be fair to Gordon, I mean, we've had a conversation lots of times, and people say, "What about that fellow? What's his name? You know, Gordon Smith." But to be honest, that out of the whole team, I would put him in that position. I would pick him to put in that position to actually convert the goal. He had that cuteness about him to take a goal, but did everything right, but just didn't lift it high enough over Gary Bailey's leg. You know, unless that would have been it, we would have actually won it. But not to be.
Great memories. I'll scoot on, because then, you know, you would think, well, the memories you got from a career are enough for many footballers' lifetime, and yet you haven't even done 6 years with Southampton yet. And
no.
And I looked at your appearances as well. You churned in kind of 40 odd appearances, season in, season out. And this was, well, what we would have thought at the time would be perhaps towards the end of your career.
Yeah, it was, well, I'm not saying funny, really, the way you look at it, because most players in them days, they had thoughts on playing to the age of 32. If you went beyond there, that's what it used to be like. You know, you'd cram in your 8 years, if you like, of a pro game, and that would be it. But I joined, as I say, Southampton 30, 31 years of age, but that was only a stopgap. Laurie said, you know, because Steve Williams had gone to Arsenal. But from then on in, I just went in, well, obviously, into the side. And what do you say, an older player sitting in midfield, you know, you wouldn't just ask to control and basically run the team from the pitch. And that's what I used to do. And I had several midfield players next to me, different ones, Andy Townsend, Barry Horn, Glenn Cochrane, the likes. And then when you've got an abundance of youngsters coming through, I mean, when I look back at it, you know, the actual, you knew they were going to be good, but you didn't know how far they would go. And if I won the ball in midfield, on the right wing, I'd have Matt Le Tissier. And then through the middle, I've had Alan Shearer. On the left wing, I'd have either Danny or Rodney Wallace. I mean, what a forward line to be able to just pop the ball through, and you know, and it worked well for me. And as you rightly say, I did season after season, missing many games, that type of thing. And that, it was due to the youngsters, really. They keep you going as well.
You could sometimes be a little bit eventful off the field.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there were moments. When you joined clubs, did managers ever say to you, "Now, hey, Jimmy, you're going to have to settle down here. Just calm down. We don't want any problems off the field. We don't want any headlines." Did any of the managers ever say anything like that to you?
Yeah, not so much that. It was just that, you know, I think they do. You don't realise, but managers do. They do. I found out a little bit later on that they do the homework, you know, and they say about, well, he likes a drink or so, and things like that. So, I mean, I've been sort of like questioned in that situation, you know, even when I signed for Southampton, Laurie says, you know, you like a bit of a drink, but you just have to calm it down a bit, or this type of thing. And, well, never give me a problem before, and I was up at Liverpool, so, you know, that type of thing. So it was like, I knew how to be the professional in the sense that you don't do it on certain nights and things like that. So I've done it all my life. So, but there's no harm in enjoying yourself and letting off a bit of steam. And that's the way I was.
I suppose that's one of the biggest things that we look at that probably has changed from the game then to the game now. And I know you're talking in the book about Chris Nichol.
Oh, yeah.
Bringing in, you know,
pasta.
And you were a steak man before a game.
Oh, yeah.
That was the pre-match meal, was it?
Yeah,
I
always used to have a steak, a lump of fillet steak with some toast and some tea. That would be my pre-match meal at 12 o'clock for the 3 o'clock kickoff. And obviously Chris was being a bit, you know, like looking to the future and things like that. And then he said, well, he took us down to the Italian restaurant for some pasta before one particular game. And I said, well, I don't like pasta. Not that I don't like it. I don't like it for a match because it repeats on me, you know, while I'm running around. And that's, I just want a fillet steak. Well, you can't have a fillet steak, he said to me. So I said, well, you know, like, it didn't do me any harm at Liverpool, because he said a steak takes 18 hours to digest, and it takes blood from, say, the calf muscles and that to digest your steak within your body, and when the blood should be going to your muscles. I said, well, it didn't do any harm to me. I always used to have one at Liverpool, so that was it. I got me steak, by the way.
You had some medals at Liverpool. You had a cup final that was agony, I suppose, in a sense, at Brighton.
Yeah.
You're then in this tremendous Southampton side, or a couple of teams, really.
Yeah.
The regret, you say in the book, you know, that Southampton team didn't win anything. Should it have won something with those players and with the Laurie's huge legacy and then into Chris Nichol as well?
Yeah, I enjoyed, obviously, Laurie was only there for the last 10 games of the season when I signed, and then he went off to Sunderland. But Chris Nichol, I thought I enjoyed him being the manager, and I enjoyed a relationship with him in that way, where I eventually got the captaincy and things like that. And, you know, we used to talk a lot. And I used to say to him every season, more or less, because the captain used to get, well, still does to this very day, that you get asked into the manager's office for a chat at the end of the season. What do you think last season? What do you think for next season? Things like that. And I always used to say to him, we're just a little bit short of being a really good side here, because one or two injuries knocks us sideways a little bit. If we had one or two more quality players, I know it's down to the board, and it's not, Chris would probably, every manager would want a lot of players, even at that time. But I think it was just slightly restricted on the money side of things, so he had to pick his players, and also how many he could have. So if we had one or two more quality players at that time, I think we could have done something. But we could give anybody a game with what we had there, with the youngsters coming through, and they settled in really quickly. They played a lot together, even before the first team level. So it was a tremendous time for me. It's just a shame that we didn't put something up there for, obviously, the supporters, because they were fantastic right the way through.
And when you look at the Southampton team of this era now that we're all, you know, lucky enough to see, are they the closest, or how would they rank against, you know, those very strong Southampton teams of the mid-80s?
Well, I think it's difficult to compare in terms of, like, the way they play and things like that, but in terms of, like, OK, the stadium, you know, everything that has moved on. And I'm just so pleased that, you know, what's happened at this summer gone, you know, the transfer situation, that they've come out and done what they've done so early on and not needed time to settle in, the players and the manager and the coaching staff and things like that. So, but I haven't watched them live too much because I do radio work up north, but I enjoy watching them on TV. I think they're a tremendous outfit. You know, even last season they were, you know, watching them up at Anfield, great play, you know, great, you know, ability and skill and everything technically, you know. I just think, you know, whether they're a little bit short, I know they've got a big programme coming up December and into January, so with the so-called big teams, but they're the big team at the moment. They're up there. Whether they can maintain it, I think you never know, because somebody's got to break through. And I think the club themselves, like, have got to break through at some stage, because that's their next goal, really. So like being like mid-table, you know, that's not a baddish season. But it's nice if you can get up there. Whether the, I don't, maybe not the top four, but just in and around the sixth mark, maybe, hopefully.
Talking about you as a player, Book's hard case.
Yeah.
Would you like to be known as one of football's hard men?
Not so much like to be known. I think it other people give you that tally, I think. You know, I think it's, what you say, there's a difference between a hard player and a dirty player. There's a system. Because if you look, there's, like, there's things being written about me from the likes of Brian Robson, Mark Hughes, and players like that in our day where a tackle was a tackle, that type of thing. And they said, well, even Brian Robson said, like, he's not a dirty player, he just knows his way around the pitch, he's experienced and that, and he's very, very, he's got strength, you know, and strong. And I never read, I mean, we're a 50-50, you know, in our day, you don't fall over that. So it's like, even if you're hurt, you still get up and just don't show that anything's happened, that type of thing. But I just feel it's, you know, in a certain situation, I think, like, some players, I mean, I remember Glenn Hoddle's, his assistant, John Gorman. We were having a charity match. We were over in Ireland playing a representative game, and he pointed down to his scar on his leg. I said, Jimmy, you know, that was you there when we played such a... I said, I don't remember that, John, you know, like that type of thing. Because my job was to take the ball off their most gifted players, I said to him, and give it to our, you know. So you must have caught my eye. You must have been playing really well that day for me to actually go over and try and attempt to take the ball off him, and hence the scar. And then he ended up saying, oh, I must have been playing well that day. Yeah, I must be a good player. So it's turning tables all the time. But I think that the hard player type thing, I was just competitive, wanting to win every game, whether it be Liverpool, Southampton, on Brighton, or even in a five-a-side game. It was always that competitive edge that took me forward.
The pitches today are like bowling greens, really, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Would you have relished to have played, and how would your game have adapted, perhaps, if you were playing on these incredible pitches every week?
I think it's getting used to everything, because I always remember the old Dell when they had the slit, sand slit in it, and other teams couldn't play on it, but we could. There was a situation where the ball would roll across the pitch and it would be going up and down like that. So your leg would be going up and down with it, but you tend to get used to it and things like that. So I think the way they play on these pitches these days, I think it's unbelievable. And I can't understand how they can't control the ball on there and pass accurately. And, you know, because, as you rightly say, they are like bowling greens. And I'd love to have played on this time, because the balls are a little bit lighter as well. Everything about the whole technology's just moved on so much, because we played on Derby County's pitch, which was notorious in them days for, it looked okay when you walked onto it, but after about 10 minutes, it was like ankle deep in mud. And basically what we used to do is flick the ball up and pass it to each other like that, because you couldn't stroke it along the ground. That was it. And, you know, we used to play decent football on them type of pitches.
I'll just touch quickly on management. Brighton in its kind of dark days, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How tough was that for you in your career?
Well, I mean, it was unbelievable. It was bizarre. And it's like, I mean, more I think about it when I do, you know, is that it was the fans that was affected, you know, more than anything. Because I think where they are today, I'm so pleased that they've got the stadium and everything. I've been down there a couple of times and it's lovely. But when the old Goldstone and the people that was there at the time, Greg Stanley, Bill Archer and David Bellotti, I think, you know, it's well documented, it has been, that, you know, they were hell-bent on selling the ground. And it was just, you know, when Liam Brady left, he was sort of like arguing with the board. And he said, you know, Liam said to me, you know, you probably get asked to do the job. You know, I said, well, if you come back in, you know, in a year's time or something like that, and I'd revert back to my reserve team role, not a problem. So I basically took it on the sense that Liam might come back, as I never ever wanted to be a manager. But if you can imagine, there was one particular time we were losing the game 2-1, and it was towards like November, that type of time, and we were trying to get back into the game. We had a corner, and 10 minutes to go before the end of the game, or 15, 10 minutes to go before the end of the game, there was protests week after week about the David Bellotti and Archer. And somebody let two fireworks off, two rockets up, and they banged in the air, obviously, just over the pitch. And then all the supporters walked out and we're trying to play a game of football. I mean, I don't blame the supporters for that type of thing, but it doesn't help us actually on the pitch and trying to get results, which, you know, was it. So, I mean, I had riot police in the tunnel in one particular game because the crowd stormed the sort of like director's box. It was only a small stand anyway. And there was only one person sat in the director's box, and that was David Bellotti. So, you know, it was just so, so bizarre.
Mm. I just want to finish by asking just a little bit about, you know, you were a player who played a long time, mm-hmm. And in an era where, you know, it was kind of, well, work hard, play hard at times probably as well.
Yeah.
What's your reaction when you hear, like, a modern player of today, like a Raheem Sterling, say, in October, a bit too tired to play for England? How do you react to that?
Well, I think that particular story, I think Roy Hodgson got it wrong, to be honest, in a way. And, you know, that should be kept in-house, that type of thing. Whether, you know, we've all been asked in my day, you know, you get asked, how are you feeling? How's that one meaning? Like, you know, I could have a dead leg, I could have a big knot in my thigh, and I'd still say to them, I'm all right, boss, that type of thing. But I think it's the way football's gone now. I think individual training, you know, schedules, things like that. There's all kinds of science comes into now, monitors and things and diet and things like that. It's just moved on so completely. So I think the footballer is actually different. I think the likes of Daniel Sturridge, he has his own training routine, things like that. I know they have to get together on certain set things and the way they're going to play at the weekend and things like that. But generally, they might get taken off and do their own little bit, which suits them. So I can understand the individualism about it. But whereas Raheem might have said, it's not that where he said, I'm a bit tired. It's probably aching limbs because, to be honest, he's one of the ones that gets absolutely battered in games. I mean, I watch every game, Liverpool, and he gets some treatments off the opposition. And he's small in stature, but he's got some strength about him. But every knock has a little bit, and it builds up and builds up. And your body can maintain. He's only 19. So I think it can be a little bit difficult. I think you've got to look at it in a way. But in our day, we just carried on. We played 50, 60 games a season. And one season at Liverpool, we only used 14 players all year in that amount of games. So that was it.